So, picture this. There is this very specific kind of silence that I think a lot of parents and caregivers are going to recognize immediately.
Oh, yeah.
It is like 2 p.m. on a Tuesday. You're at work, you may be in a meeting, or you're just folding laundry in the other room.
Right.
It's quiet. But if you are a caregiver for a child or an adult with special needs, that silence isn't peaceful at all. It's actually really heavy.
It's the background hum of their entire life, honest.
Exactly. It is loaded with this single gnawing question: what is happening right now?
Because it's not just a simple, are they safe? It's much deeper. It's are they understood? Is someone being kind to them? Are they overwhelmed right now?
Right. And we aren't talking about just general everyday worry here. We are really talking about the meltdown.
The dreaded meltdown.
Yeah, that terrifying scenario where the world just becomes too much. Maybe it's sensory overload at a loud mall, or a rough day, or a transition on a school bus that happened way too fast.
And the trigger happens.
The meltdown happens, and you, the caregiver, you are 5 miles away.
And honestly, that distance is the real source of the trauma for the parent. It creates this feeling of just absolute helplessness.
Toadie.
When you are physically there, you are the buffer. You're the translator between your child and a world that, frankly, doesn't always get it. But when you aren't there, who is?
Who steps in? Yeah.
Yeah.
And that is exactly the problem space we are stepping into today for this deep dive.
It's a heavy one, but a really important one.
Very important. We are diving into the source material on a piece of technology called AngelSense. Now, if you just glance at the box or read the basic marketing, you might think, oh, okay, it's a GPS tracker.
Which is such a massive understatement.
Right. It misses the point entirely.
Yeah.
Calling this a tracker is like calling a smartphone a calculator.
I love that comparison. The sources we're looking at today frame this not as surveillance, but as true assistive technology.
Yeah.
The tagline that really jumped out at me during my research was your remote tool for meltdowns. That is a massive shift in how we think about caregiving tech.
It really is a huge shift. We are so used to tech that just tells us where someone is. The little dot on the map.
The blue dot.
Exactly, blue dot. But this deep dive is about a tool that claims to tell you how someone is doing. And more importantly, it answers the question of how you can actually be there to help them when you aren't physically present.
It's trying to solve the paradox of independence, really.
Tell me more about that.
Well, to give a child or an adult with special needs autonomy, you have to let them leave your side. They have to go out into the world.
Right. You have to let go a bit.
But to keep them safe, you feel like you need to be right there holding their hand. So AngelSense is essentially trying to build a digital bridge across that gap between independence and safety.
So let's test that bridge. The source material breaks this down into a few distinct phases of a crisis. We've got the intervention, the prevention, and then the long-term solution.
Let's start with the hardest part, the intervention.
Yeah, let's jump right into the deep end. The crisis is happening. The meltdown has started.
They're in the red zone.
Right. The documentation paints this really vivid picture. The individual is distressed. They are highly vulnerable. Their executive function is basically crashing.
It's pure fight or flight.
And in a normal situation, like say with a neurotypical kid, you would just pick up your phone and call them. Hey, that's wrong.
Right.
But the material points out a massive flaw in that logic for this specific demographic.
It's the physical act of answering the phone. It sounds so simple to us, right? You hear a ring, you pull it out of your pocket, you slide your finger across a glass screen and say hello.
Which takes less than a second.
Exactly. But if you are in the middle of severe sensory overload, or if your motor skills are impaired by extreme stress, that sequence of actions is mountainous. It's effectively impossible.
I hadn't even thought about it that way initially, but it makes total sense. If your brain is essentially panicking, you aren't going to navigate a touchscreen user interface.
No, you aren't.
So how does this specific tool get around that biological barrier?
Well, they utilize a feature called two-way voice with auto pickup. So it's essentially a speakerphone that doesn't require the wearer to do anything at all. You call, and the device just answers itself.
That seems like such a small technical detail, just auto pickup. But the implications of that are huge for intervention.
They are massive. You completely bypass the need for the child to perform any sort of task during a crisis.
You are instantly a voice in the room, or rather, a voice right there in their ear.
And the source material really emphasizes the neurochemistry behind this. It's not just about giving orders to the kid, it's about hearing the familiar voice.
Which they call the emotional anchor later in the documentation.
Yes, the emotional anchor. When a child in distress hears their parent's voice, It actually triggers a regulation response in their nervous system. A stranger's voice simply cannot duplicate that.
Even a well-meaning stranger.
Exactly. A teacher or a bus driver can be incredibly kind and helpful, but they don't trigger that deep biological safety mechanism that a primary caregiver does. So the parent can use this for what the source calls verbal coaching.
The sources gave some really great concrete examples of this too. Instead of a teacher yelling, "Stop screaming," or "Calm down," a parent can come over the device and say, "I know it's loud. Use your breathing. Count with me. 1, 2, 3.
You are literally coaching them down from the ledge from your office chair. You are de-escalating the situation remotely.
That is the intervention aspect in real time. But there's a flip side to this audio connection that I think we really need to discuss.
The listening feature.
Yeah, it's probably the most unique feature, but also the one most cited by parents as an absolute non-negotiable necessity. I'm talking about the smart voice or listen-in feature.
The ability to open the mic and just silently hear what is going on.
Now, I have to play devil's advocate here for just a second, because to an outsider looking in, that sounds an awful lot like spying. You're just listening to the room.
It absolutely sounds like that. And I think in a purely neurotypical context, it would be highly invasive. But we have to look closely at the context of the user base we're talking about here.
The vulnerability aspect.
Yes. We are often talking about individuals who are entirely nonverbal or who have very limited communication skills. If something bad is happening to them, whether that's bullying, neglect, or a medical emergency, they cannot just come home and tell you about it over dinner.
So the device actually becomes their voice, in a way, or at least the witness to their day.
It acts as a critical safety check. The source material is full of emotional testimonials on this exact point. Parents aren't using this feature to listen in to snoop on private conversations.
Right. They're not trying to hear the playground gossip.
No, they are checking the acoustic environment. Is it chaotic right now? Is someone yelling at my child? Is my child crying and being completely ignored by the staff?
That is a really heavy reality to face.
Yeah.
But it directly addresses that deep fear of maladaptive behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Like if my child starts flapping their arms or making loud noises in a grocery store, how are the strangers around them reacting?
Exactly. Are they safe? Are they being treated with basic dignity? The listen-in feature allows the caregiver to verify physical and emotional safety without needing a live camera feed.
It closes the information gap that usually fuels the caregiver's own anxiety.
It's a tool for validating reality.
I feel like something is wrong, and then you can click a button and actually know for sure.
Validating reality is a great way to put it, but validation in the moment is still reactive. You are still catching the meltdown while it's happening.
The fuse is already lit.
Exactly. The really exciting stuff in the source material, the true high-level insight, if you will, is about moving from being reactive to being proactive.
Stopping the train before it wrecks entirely.
Yes. And to do that effectively, you need data. Which brings us to the biometrics and well-being aspect of the Angel Sense system.
Now, we're all pretty used to biometrics at this point. I got a smartwatch on my wrist right now telling me my heart rate and my step count. But usually that is just for fitness. Mm-hmm. You know, did I burn enough calories today? How is this application different?
It's all about context. Yeah. That is the fundamental difference here. A high heart rate while you are running on a treadmill is a good thing. A high heart rate while sitting quietly in a math class is a massive warning sign.
That makes perfect sense.
Angel Sense uses the device to establish a personal baseline for the wearer. It learns over time what normal looks like for that specific individual.
And when it sees something abnormal, say a sudden spike in heart rate, combined with a lack of movement or maybe really intense pacing back and forth, mm-hmm. It doesn't just quietly log that data. It alerts the caregiver immediately.
And this is the true game changer. Physiologically speaking, a meltdown rarely comes out of absolutely nowhere. There is almost always a rumble phase beforehand.
A physical buildup.
Yes. The heart rate spikes the adrenaline, dumps into the system, the breathing gets shallow and fast. All of this physiological change happens before the outward behavioral explosion.
So if you as a caregiver get that push alert during the rumble phase?
You have a window of opportunity.
Hmm.
The source describes this incredibly powerful workflow. You get a high heart rate alert on your phone. You don't panic. You go straight into what they call detective mode.
You use the tools we just talked about.
Yeah.
You turn on the one-way voice to listen in.
Right. You tune into their environment. And let's say, using an example straight from the documentation, you hear a really loud fire drill siren in the background. Or maybe a construction jackhammer right outside the classroom window.
Suddenly, it is no longer a mystery. It's not just, oh, he is having a bad day today. It's He is terrified of that specific noise right now.
And because you know the exact root cause, you can actually fix it. You switch over to the two-way voice and you intervene. Hey, buddy, I hear that loud siren. It is just a test. It will be over in 10 seconds, I promise. Put your hands over your ears. You are doing great.
You defuse the bomb. You stop the spiral completely. That is just so much more powerful than getting a sad report at the end of the school day saying we had an incident.
It empowers the parent to be an active participant in their child's day rather than just functioning as the cleanup crew at the end of it. It changes the entire emotional dynamic from helpless to actively helpful.
I want to zoom out a bit here.
Mm-hmm.
Because what you just described is brilliant for solving a problem in the immediate moment.
Mm.
But if you do that enough times, if you collect enough of that daily data, you start to see something bigger. You start to see the matrix.
You start to see the behavioral patterns. This is the third major segment of our analysis, long-term pattern recognition.
This was the part of the source material that really struck me as evidence-based caregiving. It feels almost scientific in its approach.
It really transforms the caregiver into a behavioral scientist. The system aggregates all this physiological and location data over time, and the source gives a very specific, very relatable example of how this plays out.
The pacing example.
Yes. Imagine the system flags a recurring spike in pacing steps, which is a well-known anxiety indicator at the exact same time every single Tuesday.
Every Tuesday, right at 10:15 a.m.
Now, without that hard data, a parent or teacher might just think, oh, you know, Tuesdays are always rough for him. Or he is just moody this week. We tend to blame the internal state of the child.
We pathologize the behavior right away. We think it's just part of their condition.
Exactly. We write it off. But with the data, you can actually look at the school schedule. What exactly happens at 10:15 on Tuesdays? And you investigate and realize, oh, that is when the custodial staff waxes the floors in the main hallway. The chemical smell of the wax is the sensory trigger.
Or maybe it's a super loud gym class next door to their room at that exact time.
Yes. And once you have that data-backed correlation, you can work to change the environment.
You can go to the school administration with a printed chart, not just an emotional opinion, but a factual chart.
Mm-hmm.
And you can say, we need to move his transition time by 10 minutes to avoid the hallway being waxed.
Or you say he needs to wear noise-canceling headphones specifically at 10:15.
That is profound. It stops asking the vulnerable individual to just toughen up and cope with a hostile sensory environment, and instead it adjusts the environment to let the individual actually thrive.
It is a structural solution rather than a behavioral one, and frankly, it saves parents from carrying around a lot of guilt. It proves there's a tangible reason for the distress. It validates that the child isn't just acting out, they are actively reacting to a stimulus that we adults just couldn't see before.
Speaking of reasons and triggers, we have to talk about transitions. The source material flags transition moments as one of the absolute highest risk times for special needs individuals.
Transitions are the enemy of stability. Moving from the safety of home to the loud bus, to the school building, school to aftercare. These are the cracks in the pavement where severe anxiety seeps in. It's the panic of what happens next.
An angel sense has a specific feature for this that I found really clever.
Yeah.
It isn't live voice. It is smart voice messages.
It's pre-recorded audio from the caregiver.
Which honestly sounds a little less personal at first glance. Why would you pre-record it? Why not just call them live?
Because it allows for absolutely perfect timing and flawless consistency every single day. You can set a voice message to play automatically when the device enters a certain geolocation or at a very specific time on the clock. The source specifically calls this an emotional anchor.
I just love that imagery. An emotional anchor.
Think about that afternoon bus ride home. It is noisy, it is chaotic, the parent obviously isn't there. But suddenly, as the bus pulls away from the school, the device automatically plays a familiar message. Hi, honey, good job at school today. You are on the bus now, it is going to take you home, and I have a snack waiting for you.
It answers the scary question before the anxiety even has a chance to ask it.
It creates vital predictability. And for the neurodivergent brain, predictability equals safety. It essentially bridges the scary transition with a familiar, comforting voice. It is like leaving a sweet note in their lunchbox, but it physically speaks to them exactly when they need to hear it most.
And over time, it builds that routine.
Yeah.
They learn to expect the voice, which means they learn to expect that everything is actually going to be okay.
Precisely. It builds trust in their daily routine.
But we have to be real for a second here. We have talked a lot about intervention, prevention, spotting long-term patterns. But sometimes, despite the absolute best technology and the best parenting in the world, things still go wrong.
The biology takes over completely.
Right. The fight or flight response kicks in so hard that the situation escalates.
You're talking about the elopement scenario,
Yeah.
wandering, running away from safety.
This is the ultimate nightmare scenario that we started this deep dive with. And this is where the foundational GPS technology of AngelSense really comes back into play. But even here, the source material points out a crucial nuance that I think most people entirely miss when they think about tracking devices.
It's not just about finding them on a flat map.
Right, because if you are looking for your lost smartphone, a little blue dot on a Google map is perfectly fine. Oh, it is at the library. I'll go get it. But if you are looking for a frightened child who is actively hiding from the world, knowing they are somewhere at the library isn't enough information to save them.
Are they locked in the bathroom? Are they in the basement? Are they curled up behind a bookshelf?
It is the indoor problem.
Exactly. Standard GPS really struggles with verticality and indoor precision. And if a child is hiding because they are completely overwhelmed, they probably aren't going to answer you when you call their name. They might be curling up in a tight ball in a dark supply closet, totally shut down.
So how does the device actually help resolve that specific terrifying situation?
It features something called a device alarm. The caregiver can remotely trigger a very loud, continuous sound to emit from the physical device itself.
It functions like an emergency beacon.
It turns the search from a frustrating visual one, where you're looking for a child who is trying not to be seen, into an auditory search. You just follow the loud sound. In a situation where every single second feels like an entire hour, that speed of recovery is absolutely critical.
It is genuinely fascinating how every single feature we've discussed today, from the audible alarm to the listen-in to the voice coaching, really ties back to that core central idea of presence.
That really is the grand synthesis of all this, isn't it?
It really is. When I first started reading this material, I thought, okay, this is a high-tech safety leash. But it's not that at all.
No. A leash restricts movement. A leash tells you cannot go over there. This technology is actually framed as an independence enabler.
Break that down a bit more, because having a GPS tracker physically attached to you sounds like the exact opposite of independence.
Well, think about it from the parent's perspective. If you are constantly terrified that your child will have a severe meltdown and you won't know about it, what do you naturally do?
You keep them close.
You keep them home. You don't let them go on the school field trip. You personally drive them everywhere. Your own entirely justified fear ends up shrinking their world.
You basically clip their wings to keep them safe from the fall.
Exactly. But if you have this tool, if you know for a fact that if their heart rate spikes, you will know instantly. If you know you can talk them down from a panic attack from 5 miles away, you let go. You let them get on the bus by themselves. You let them go to the park with their friends.
So the surveillance aspect actually buys them their freedom in the end.
It buys the caregiver peace of mind, which is the necessary currency you have to pay for the child's independence. It allows the individual to exist in the real world, to make mistakes, to have real experiences with a safety net that is completely invisible but absolute.
It shifts the entire dynamic from, I need to be standing right next to you to keep you safe, to, I am with you even when I'm not physically there.
And that profound shift from reactive to proactive, from always cleaning up the emotional mess to actually preventing the explosion that changes the entire quality of life for the whole family, it changes the relationship from one of constant exhausting vigilance to one of managed supportive care.
It really challenges our standard definition of what it means to be a caregiver in the modern age.
It absolutely forces us to rethink the mechanics of care.
Which leads me to the thought I really want to leave you, our listeners, with today. We have spent this deep dive talking heavily about technology, batteries, GPS algorithms, auto pickup features. But underneath all of that, we are really talking about human connection.
Go on, where are you taking this?
Well, if I can see your heart rate on my screen, and I can hear the ambient noise of the room you are standing in, and I can whisper comforting words directly into your ear, am I absent?
That is a deeply profound question.
We traditionally define presence as physical proximity, right? Bodies occupying the same room. But this technology suggests a totally new kind of digital presence. Is it possible that for some of these vulnerable families, this continuous digital link is almost as real, almost as tangible as physically being there?
It certainly blurs the line in a beautiful way, in a way you are extending your sensory self, your ears, your voice across physical space. For a child who desperately needs that emotional anchor, does it really matter if the voice is coming from a tiny speaker or a human throat? The neurochemistry suggests it might not matter at all. The brain hears mom or dad, and it calms down.
It suggests that genuine care is actually transferable through technology.
It suggests that love and safety can be transmitted over a cellular network, and that is just a fascinating, incredibly hopeful place to be.
It certainly is. A dedicated tool for safety that ultimately turns out to be a tool for personal freedom.
The absolute best kind of tech we could ask for.
Well, that brings us to the end of today's deep dive into Angel Sense. There is a lot of heavy emotional material to unpack there, so we hope this sparks some new thoughts on how we can better care for the people we love.
Thanks so much for listening and exploring this with us.
Stay curious, keep learning, and we will catch you on the next deep dive.